Hey everyone, welcome to Locally Perfected, where we know franchises are built by people and we're here to talk to them. Today we have Devin Handler from Naf Naf Middle Eastern Grill. Devin is a rock star in our space. Many of you probably know him, but I'll take you through his timeline. He started at Qdoba, bringing them from 80 locations to 800. Then going over to Garbanzo, did a lot of time bringing them out to market. And now, as I mentioned, sitting over at Naf Naf Middle Eastern Grill, Devin, welcome to the show. How's it going?
Hey, man. How are you?
Doing great. Doing great. We like to kick things off with a few icebreakers here. So I'm going to go ahead and ask you, what is the last place you ordered out and what's the last place you dined in? Let us know.
Well, the first one, ordering out, is embarrassing, but let me contextualize for a second. So when I order out, being a marketer, I'm very aware of my need state, right? Everybody talks about need state and occasion-based marketing and all right. The buzzwords and all the nonsense that goes with it. It's the science, right, of marketing. But yeah. The reality is it's actually appropriate and true. The last thing I ordered out was Domino's. And the reason why is not because I love Domino's and I just need more Domino's in my life. It's when I'm driving home, I can hit one button and one button will order my meal for my family. It will ring all of their cell phones and let them know it's coming and put a tracker on their phone so they know when it's coming. So they know when to be home, what they're getting, and why they're getting it, right? And so with a single button, I can pay, alert everyone, and have it all done. And then it just shows up.
I feel like I have too much look into your head right now. I know
your
what-
Your convenience.
Right,
yeah. Your convenience is why I do it. So-
You know what? That's amazing. Actually, a really great time to let folks know that this episode is sponsored by Netflix Bad Vegan. Domino's Pizza, a good mention there. Perfect timing, Devin. That is
no premeditation in any way, shape, or form. Jeez. It just so happens that it's a great example of a company that's pivoted from being a pizza company to a technology company and in enabling convenience and value in terms of temporal value and financial value and taking their company culture and what they mean to do, taking a need state, combining them, and hitting that Venn diagram gold. Because let me tell you, I do not love Domino's pizza. I do not love Domino's food. I don't hate it,
right?
Okay. But I will buy it all the time for convenience.
Prioritization.
And there's that. Nice. Then an entirely different need state drives my sit-down dining experience. Okay. That one was I'm looking for hospitality. I'm looking for better food, and I'm looking for ambiance and experience. So the last place I went is a small chain, 4 locations.
Okay.
It's called Lake House, and it literally sits right on a lake right near my house. It has a beautiful patio. The food is okay. It's not tremendous, but pretty good. But the ambiance, the hospitality, and the area sitting by a lake on a patio eating my meal was what drove me there, right? Wow. And on top of it, pandemic be damned, it's outside. So yeah. Okay. I like that too. So at the end of the day, need state drove both my decisions, right?
Yeah.
And so people can poo-poo on need state and occasion-based marketing, but it's true. And it drives everything. And we'll talk about it later in this podcast, but ultimately, what a need state is a trigger for consideration. And if you're not considering anybody's product, you're never buying anybody's product. So it's all about consideration and need states trigger that.
Nice. Gosh, well, shout out Lake House. When I'm out in Denver, I'm going to be making sure that is on the list of stops.
They actually brew their own beer too. So when you're out there, I'll make sure we hit it.
I was already sold. The deal is closed. The deal is closed over here.
Lovely. Man. Place.
Devin, sounds great. Now that we're rolling, okay, we're talking about needs-based. What does, right now, Naf Naf, what does a fast-growing, nimble brand need to be thinking about? You mentioned we're post-pandemic. People are getting their butts back into those seats, and the weather's getting nice. What do you need to be thinking about?
So here's, I think in headlines. Where I came from in my career started in the advertising agency world as a copywriter. So my brain just thinks in headlines when I think of things. So okay. I'll throw out these sort of phrases and then I'll contextualize.
I love
so, there's poison coming out of my mouth when I say things like now more than ever, in these crazy times, things like that. But one of the headlines that I like to throw out is brilliant basics. And I think what happened with the pandemic, since no one can ever prepare for something like this, is that it forced everybody to take a really hard look at themselves, kind of similar to the Great Recession, right? Not the Great Depression, the Great Recession, right? Yeah. When that happened, it made companies take a really hard look at how they were operating, and they were saying trim the fat and all this stuff with the words you heard. But ultimately what they were doing was looking at how do I do more with less without offering less for more.
Yeah.
Right. And that was the order of the day. I think that lesson stayed with us for like 6 months. And then people got fat and happy again. And the world, everybody started getting bloated and they lost the moral of that story. What the pandemic has forced us all to do is do that same exercise again, but for a different reason. And the difference between the recession and the pandemic is that when the recession ends, the world is still reeling. Consumers are, you know, jacked up in whatever way, shape, or form. The consumer confidence index is just in the trough. Yeah. And nobody knows what's going on. With the pandemic, all we did was lock down and wait. And when we opened it back up, everybody started banging on the doors of all these businesses with old timey burlap sacks of money with dollar signs on it saying, right, we want to spend our money and we expect the exact same amount of service and hospitality and everything else that we got pre-pandemic. Where the hell are you guys?
Yeah, I understand.
Right? And no one would take any excuse. Anything you said was an excuse. And right, some systems operated different, some didn't, whatever. But the point was everybody was in the same mess and consumer demand came back like an avalanche and nobody was ready. So the brilliant basics is talking about operating with, you know, in my world, since we're sort of a point and shoot, scoop and go model, what the ideal optimization for us operationally is pivots. Being able to pivot on the line, not paces, right? Not moving. When you take steps, when you take paces versus pivots, any operator who's listening is going, amen, brother, because the reality is every step is a second lost or seconds lost, which increased throughput, confusion, I mean, decreased throughput and increased confusion, just a bunch of operational issues. You wanna pivot, not pace, ideally. Right. And if you can do that, then you get aces in their places and you get labor in line. That's a brilliant basic, right? That's getting your operations on point. And if you get them to a point where you can operate with less and knowing that less is more, but not being able to offer less for more, then you're in the ideal spot, right? So brilliant basics is critical, getting that done. If you don't have that, you're not what I call, again, headline, ready for revenue. If your restaurant is not ready for revenue, the worst thing you can do for it is good marketing. The worst thing you can do for a bad experience or bad product is good marketing.
Right. So
don't go there, right? Get your brilliant basics in line. Get your table stakes together. Make sure if we're speaking restaurants or even retail that you're ready for revenue, meaning, when we drive this revenue, if you can't service it properly, it is poor revenue.
How do you throttle while maintaining growth? How do you throttle that? No,
you can't. So what you got to do is try to be lucky. And again, more headlines, luck favors the prepared, right? So how do you prepare? You prepare by getting your brilliant basics in line. Here's a great example of a brilliant basic that's lost during the pandemic. Dining room cleanliness, bathroom cleanliness. You forgot because nobody was there and you didn't really give a crap, right?
Nobody's in there. When we started this pandemic, we had it overly clean. I think we were doing smoke bombs, we were spraying them, and now totally went into dining rooms in a ghost town.
You bet. We've forgotten that muscle has atrophied, right? We have lost our muscle. And so we need to build our brilliant basic muscles back. Because let me tell you, a clean bathroom is something you will never win on. No one will ever walk out of a NAF saying, damn, that was the cleanest bathroom I've ever seen. Maybe.
With our fingers crossed.
They will certainly walk out of it and say, that's the most disgusting bathroom I've ever been in. Never go to this place. What is their food standards? What's going on? This place sucks. So while we'll never, ever win on a clean bathroom, we will lose every single time on a dirty bathroom. Death by a thousand cuts is the nature of a franchised organization and a franchisee. Because if you're not paying attention to the brilliant basics and the table stakes, then all of a sudden you're just leaking everywhere. And if you're not the owner of the concept, is the ownership mentality really there? Or are you relying on the franchisor to come in and do some kind of inspection? Both of which are kind of fine, but also not the right way to do it. What you need to do is operate out of pride and have your brilliant basics and your table stakes met. If you have those things locked, then you move on to the next thing, which is increasing foot traffic. Because the last thing on earth, like I said, you want to do is increase foot traffic if you're not ready for revenue.
Right.
Because you will piss off those people and they'll tell everybody, or worse, you'll only adequately service them and they'll be met. And if you're a 5 out of 10, that's the worst place you could possibly be, because they're not going to tell you you suck so you can fix it. And they're not going to sing your praises to anybody else. They're just going to go away.
Yeah.
And that's not what you want. So that said, let's assume you have your brilliant basics covered. You are ready for revenue. So what's a struggling retail person to do post-pandemic? Well, back to brilliant basics. Now is the time to refocus on building your hyper-local strategies. And what I mean by hyper-local is not a commercial for hyper-locology or anything like that. It just so happens.
Great bunch of people, I've heard.
I heard they're okay. But the reality is that the name that, you know, that you guys have chosen is the category of what people really need to be focusing on and were pre-pandemic. And pre-pandemic, two things were sort of the redheaded stepchild of what you're up to. One was off-premises in any way that was serviced, right? And I say off-premises as a point, I really say the S, because premises is a place, premise is a thought. Our industry loves to say off-premise. It's totally wrong. If they're telling you you're off-premise, you're saying whatever you're saying is wrong. Ooh. If you're talking about off-premises, you're talking
about consumption. Evan Handler has you on blast, folks. Change your ways. Today I learned. That's gold in itself.
It's just a simple little thing that drives me nuts. Nails on a chalkboard. Please use the English language.
I'll never again. Here we go.
It's my copywriting nature and being beaten up by editors forever. But anyway, the reality behind that story, though, is that off-premises consumption of restaurant food was something that was just gravy extra. We didn't really care about. Those of us who understood it and leaned into it were more prepared for the pandemic. But as you've heard in every podcast and every article and everything, everybody pivoted. Yeah, well, they had to, right? And you had no choice. Those of us who were ready, luck favors the prepared, did better with it. And what we were able to do was optimize that channel, right? So off-premises became a major deal, right? The other thing that people were a redheaded stepchild dabbling in, sticking their toes in the water, was this idea of hyper-local marketing, right? Because it's much easier to do an umbrella and then do sort of trickle-down marketing, if you will, than it is to focus on individual locations, especially if you're a 40 plus unit chain, right? That requires folks, attention, people, resources, whatever, right? And so the reality is those two things are kind of over here. And then we had our core business. The pandemic hit, the core business went away. What are we doing? How do we exist? How do I keep the lights on? How do I have a business post-pandemic? Is the light at the end of the tunnel the train, or am I getting out of this thing?
Yeah.
Right? Nobody knew. I still don't know. But we were prepared, therefore lucky. And what we did was optimize the brilliant basics of those two channels, right? We began optimizing hyperlocal and we began optimizing off-premises. And actually, we combined them, right? We used hyperlocal strategies to create awareness and trial of our off-premises offerings. And the reason we did off-premise offerings, because we didn't have an on-premise opportunity. There, you couldn't even come. You walk in, grab it, and take it somewhere else. But even that was sketchy, right? But now that we're back wide open, knock on wood, right? There's variants everywhere. I'm hearing of cases rising, you know, let's not even say it.
Yeah.
But now is the time to refocus on what was once the redheaded stepchilds of your annual operating plan, right? These kids are now full siblings, if not, you know, grown up people who are actually contributing in the world. So now is the time to focus on, you know, optimizing the brilliant basics of your off-premises channels, whatever those are, but then rebuilding or building for the first time your hyperlocal strategies to improve or regain that foot traffic that you once relied on and thought would just organically come from whatever you're doing. Because due to the lockdown, many businesses had to close their physical stores, right? And they were operating online only. So the hyperlocal and the digital stuff was the only thing they could do. But now that we're back open, how do I use that to continue servicing those channels, but also bring in foot traffic?
Right. Now that my hand's not being forced, how do I make better what I've already been proven, what has already been proven to keep my business moving forward? That's the thinking.
So now take that as a tactic, right? In a world, I used to work for beer, wine, and spirits, and I worked for Coors for a long time as a client. Hey. And one of their category managers taught me a very useful tool in planning. And it's just called OST. It's just objective, strategy, tactics in a chart format.
Okay.
Super easy. Okay.
OST.
OST. It's the easiest way to sketch out a plan. And you write your objective or objectives. Obviously, you don't want many. Then you write your strategies and then you do your bazillion tactics over here, right? And if you think, you know, if you think militarily and think strategy, what that really is the objective is to win the war, right? The strategy is to take the hill, right, in the battle. And the tactics are, God, foot soldiers, cavalry, cannons, like all the cavalry. Nonsense, right?
Bringing the horses.
Right, but you can't start with tactics, right? What you have to start with is the goal. And then the strategy to achieve the goal, and then the tactics that help you achieve the strategy that ultimately achieve the goal, right? And we've all heard SMART goals, you know, strategic, measurable, attainable, realistic, time, you know, it's the acronym SMART, right? And the reality of that is just so people who don't know how to write goals can write a goal. And the whole point of the goal is that's the overarching thing. But the strategy is what we're talking about right now. And the strategy really for restaurants in particular, be it a franchisee or the franchisor, is that there's really only three things that you can do. You can get new guests, steal a competitor's guests, or get more out of existing guests.
Okay, right? Let's do all three.
Those are the three. And if everything, all the tactics and nonsense you got going on out there isn't laddering up to one or all three of those, you are doing it wrong.
If you have to choose one, if you're talking about one to prioritize there, those are three that sound really important to me.
They're super important and super easy. And I think the temptation is to, I guess, obfuscate that in such a way that it's just muddy as shit and that you got 80 things going on. You don't know what they're laddering up to. You live in this tactical, you know, hairball and sales might be up, but you have no idea what's doing it because nothing's operating in isolation. Everything's happening at once. And when, and there's an old saying, another headline, when everything's important, nothing is important.
Right. And that brings us all back to taking a really granular look at every single approach, and looking at everything sometimes can blur the important things to be to look at. And you
when you're this close to something, it's hard to look at it from here. Yeah. Right. And when you're in the weeds, that's why they say that you are in the weeds. You can't see anything, right? You can't see the forest through the trees. Right. Yep. So I'm a simple man. I'm just a caveman. Right. And what I like to do, I like to keep it pretty simple, you know, stupid, you know, and if I do that, I try to isolate things, or at least I try to create it in such a way that I anticipate its contribution margin and measure it based on its contribution to my goal, not on did it do something. So each thing needs to have its own scorecard, but I can't do 50 things, right? What I say no to is equally as important as what I say yes to, and maybe more.
So what is something that you bring up a good one? I'm going to ignore the fact that you called me stupid. I caught that. You went right by it.
It was the KISS acronym.
What is that? What is that pitfall? What have you tried? What have you failed? What has been the thing that maybe you don't focus on? What's the shiny object to stay away from?
I think it's a double-edged sword. I think a pitfall that many people fall into, right? A trap is trying to crack the organic social code. That's a tough nut to crack, right?
When you say the social or the code, is this a handshake?
I mean organic social specifically, not paid, yep. Right?
Yeah, I'm with you. Yeah.
So as social media managers for our brands, that whether you are or manage the social media manager, mm-hmm. There are types of content out there where you can get really creative, right? And be out there. But that's heavy brand. And you got to earn that. I think there is a reality in organic social that it needs to be not a shill, meaning, you know, the guy walks up to you and opens his jacket and says, I got what you need, right? You don't want to ever be that guy, yeah. Right? You don't want to ever be presumptuous and say, you know, beat your chest and say, we're the best at anything. And you also don't want to be obviously advertorial where you're trying to hide the fact that you're advertising.
Okay.
Right? These are all things that we've all become attuned to, right? And in the old early internet days, the blinky flashy thing in the bottom right corner used to attract attention. Now it is a sign to do not look at that in any way, shape, or form.
Every time I click it.
You don't want it there, right? So what you don't want to be is wallpaper or nonsense. What you want to be is relevant, right? So how do you do that? You know, I think you show your unpolished side. I think you have fun. I think you capitalize on the moments when the current conversation intersects with your culture or your brand.
Filter-free zone.
Yeah, you know, I mean, you feature your rallying point often and in the present, you know, and you don't underestimate the power of UGC, right? User-generated content. And remember, there's nothing that bonds a community more than sharing a meal or a laugh, right? Yeah. So if I can be the purveyor of the meal,
great. Maybe you can provide a laugh. Yeah,
maybe I can provide some laughs. But what I can't do is lean hard either way and swing that pendulum one way or the other. So what I'm currently struggling with right now is that I want my social to be a little bit more transactional with a call to action to order. Okay. Because what's happening is I've sort of leaned too far into my brand and I'm trying to create this brand thing. As an emerging brand, it's tough to do because last time I checked, there's no cash registers at the corporate support center. So I got to get people in the doors and buying stuff, right? And while I might think how clever my April Fool's joke was, It did it drive sales?
How'd it go?
For us, I took the zeitgeist of bold flavors in hard seltzers right now, like from Guy Fieri's Bold Flavor Town commercial.
Oh, yeah.
And I took our favorite flavors of garlic sauce, falafel, and tahini and made hard seltzers out of them.
Oh my gosh.
And posted them and said, for a limited time, you can grab these delicious flavors.
Demand was through the roof. I can only
imagine. People freaked out. Everybody knew it was a joke, except for one of our board members who thought we were now selling alcohol, and I had to defend it. But
hey, always the fun times.
But the point of that board member anecdote is that it doesn't always land.
Right. Okay.
And so you got to know your audience and you got to make sure it lands. And it also has to have some degree of transactional power and ROI to it. Otherwise, what's the point of spending all that time on it? Back to the original question, what's the pitfall? I could spend months and specific, you know, weeks out of the month on trying to crack this organic social code. To what end? What is it really doing for me? Right. Well, what it's doing is ultimately creating culture and community. And if I do that right, then I become a brand, not a thing, right?
Okay.
And I think Apple is a great example of a brand, not a thing, right? Because the true definition of loyalty is going to my location to pay full margin for my products while walking past a competitor on a discount.
Respect.
That's loyalty, right?
I agree.
Digital punch cards, punch, Patronics, all that, that's affinity. Affinity engenders loyalty. Loyalty is a behavior. Affinity is a feeling.
I'm with you. This is all really, really powerful. And what you talk about, everything from understanding an audience to perfecting the basics. And those basics within a franchise system are oftentimes dictated from the top down. And dictated is a tough word. They are spelled out for the recipe for success. And you have an interesting seat. There's so many different cooks in your kitchen, metaphorically. When you have individual business owners, individual operators, all laddering up to you, looking for those basics, whether they be serviced by the branch of marketing or another division within corporate, they ultimately are looking back and saying, but help me individually.
You used the cooks in the kitchen, you know, metaphor. I use another great one, a restaurant analog. It's called a cheesecloth. In restaurants, there's a thing called cheesecloth.
I love cheesecloth.
It's a filter in essence, right?
Yeah.
So what I like to say is the brand creates the cheesecloth. You, as an individual business owner, push your ideas through this cheesecloth. And whatever comes out on the other side is de facto brand approved, right? That's the right way to do it. The other way to really incorporate that thought is when you build your culture, and this is, hey, franchisors listening, and then any franchisees, I guess, too. The reality here is that a franchisor builds the systems, builds the cheesecloth, builds the culture. You buy into that culture. You lease the marks and all of those systems, but you own and run the business.
True.
So what you need to do is take that pride of ownership, believe in the culture that attracted you to the franchisor, the brand in the first place, and take that culture and push it forward. It makes no sense to be attracted to a culture and a brand, buy it, and then try to operate it somehow differently.
No.
Why would you ever do that, right? All you're doing is hamstringing yourself. You're shooting yourself in the foot before you even get out the gate.
But does innovation come from the front line? How do you not stifle innovation while keeping franchisees within brand parameters? How do you meaningfully take in feedback of like,
here's a great example.
Yeah.
So at one of my brands, I had a franchisee say, hey, can I launch an appetizer category in the menu? Can I take some of our stuff, make it smaller, and offer an appetizer?
Okay.
Right? And my answer was, sure. He's like, what?
Okay.
I'm like, here's your test form. Here's what you have to do. Here's the numbers that you have to provide. Here's the cadence on how you have to do it. you can do whatever we think is appropriate in your market. We think it's a decent idea. Test it.
Nice, man. That's empowering. How'd it go?
Most of the time, they're like, wait a minute, you want me to do the work? And you're like, yes, it's your idea. And they're like,
that's what I was wondering. So I was wondering if that continued on.
That's one way. Other guys get really deep into it. They go crazy with it. And then they find out it works or it doesn't work. And they find out it doesn't work. It's the greatest situation ever because their great idea, while seemingly awesome, was proven to be operationally untenable,
right?
Or didn't create the revenue expected. And at the end of the day, they proved that to themselves without me trying to tell them that. But I got the benefit of learning that that doesn't work.
And you now know moving forward.
So now the guy in, you know, Alaska, who comes up with it 3 years later.
Shout out Juno.
Yep. I can say, hey, we tried this. Didn't work 3 years ago. Maybe it'll work in your market. Here's the protocol. Knock it out.
Wow.
Right.
It sounds like that you have a solid balance internally of understanding the per location approach, the individuality, while still the brand aligned, but also an ear to the experts, an ear to the people on the ground, an ear to the customer.
The operators know so much, right? The operators know so much. The problem with an operator,
better or worse,
is that they're operating. So they're busy as can be, right? And in this world, just staffing and supply chain alone occupies 90% of your thought. So how are you going to share that with anybody in any meaningful way? Or if you come up with something cool and you share it and I throw that test protocol in your way, you're like, no, right? I can't do that, right?
Yeah.
And so good ideas can be lost. So what you have to do is you got to listen. You got to pay attention. You got to parking lot stuff. And in our organization, our executive team meets once a month for a full week where we lock everybody out and we just talk about stuff. And this is where that stuff comes from,
right?
It boils up, goes on our parking lot. We don't lose it. Last thing we do is admire our problems. We don't just look at the same thing and come up with great solutions, tap ourselves on the back and say, look how smart we are for solving it and create some unexecutable solution.
Right.
So that next meeting it comes back up, or next year I'm looking at the same problem. Right. It's all about just communicating and talking. But again, it's these brilliant basics, man. It is about being ready for revenue. It is polishing up your systems and making sure you're somewhat unshakable in terms of how you operate. You'll never be unshakable, right? But luck favors the prepared. So when something punches you in the gut, you have some mechanism somewhere to try to recover, right? Or pivot to. That's it.
I hear you, folks. You heard it here first. You heard it here first. Devin Handler.
For the millionth time. What I should be saying should not be revelatory to anyone, actually, to be honest. What I am saying is stop doing all that you're doing. Look back at the foundation of what you have, because if your foundation is cracked, your basement will leak. Right? I mean, it just happens. So do what you can.
Brilliant basics.
That's it. The brilliant basics, you know? And if you got that down now, you know, I always say, you know, people say, you know, crawl before you walk, walk before you run. But the end goal really is being able to sprint intermittently without being out of breath. Right. And that is an athlete, right? There's a huge difference between an athlete and someone just running.
I'm not trying
you
to
want to be an athlete, practice. Right? You want to be an athlete, and that's dedication. That's practice. That's discipline. These are things that, you know, we lose. I talked about our muscles atrophy, right? They do. When we stop doing something, the muscle memory goes away. So the key is make it habitual, but make it cultural. So if you make it cultural, the habit is easy, right? And it's like, that's it. It's just what you do, right? You smile. I always say, you know, please, 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 if you don't see someone smiling, share one of yours.
Ooh.
And they're like, what? And I'm like, yeah, if you don't see somebody smiling, share one of yours. You just might make their day. You may have saved a life without knowing it. I mean, it's that impactful.
It's free.
Just smile.
It's free. I love it.
It's free, right? Yeah. And on McDonald's menu boards, it said smiles are free for years. I don't know if you ever knew that. Old menu boards, it said smiles are free. I don't know if anyone's ever even noticed that if you've never worked at a McDonald's, but I noticed. And when it's on the board, what does that become? Culture. And if it becomes culture, what does that become? Habit. And if it becomes habit, then it's like a sympathetic nervous system response. You don't even know you're doing it, right? Your parasystem tells you, thank God, to breathe without having to think about it. You know, it digests your food without having to think about it. That's how a smile and a hey should be from any employee that I have ever in any situation when they come in contact with a guest.
We're going to bring you down to the South one of these times, and you will get your fill of big smiles and big heys.
Look, I mean, as creepy in Stepford as my pleasure is from Chick-fil-A, it is a feather in their brand cap. These monkeys are saying my pleasure, like religiously, I guess, no pun intended there. And it's just nuts. Like these kids, you see these same children. These are high school kids in most situations working at all these other places. None of them, not one of them behave the same way that a Chick-fil-A employee does. So I don't know if they do something in an orientation or whatever.
I've seen Men in Black.
My guess is culture. My guess is the culture is so strong that it becomes habitual and that you're odd for not buying in. And you will self-select out. They won't fire you. You will realize this is not for you.
It's not my place.
Right? Gosh. I don't want to be like that. I don't think brands should be like that. But those guys somehow do an incredible job with it, and their volumes tell you. I mean, for a chicken sandwich place to be doing, you know, average like 6.5 million is just nuts.
Respect the pickle. Just to call it a chicken sandwich, it's that pickle. That's a little special something there. God, you know,
love. Let me tell you, McDonald's was laughed at when they started McCafe. Right? Everyone said, good luck. Starbucks will crush you. Know what happened?
Fill us
a couple billion dollars later, McCafe is an incredible part of McDonald's business and probably the pivotal cog in their recovery back in whenever 2010 when they started that, when McDonald's on a serious decline because carbonated soft drinks and like fast food was the bane of everyone's existence.
Oh, yeah.
So what'd they do? They figured out how to take on a champion, right? A category captain. And they took them on and they beat them, in my opinion. I think Starbucks is a
household winner here at the Place House.
Well, I mean, there's just room for two.
There's room for two.
There's Burger King and McDonald's. There's Coke and Pepsi. There's Hertz and Avis. You know, algebra, geometry, cats, dogs, whatever. Right?
Can you choose algebra or geometry? I don't think those are options.
You know, they're just kind of interchangeable things, equal, separate but different, separate but equal.
Different things.
Disciplines, right? Some people prefer algebra, some people prefer geometry, some people prefer Coke. Cats, dogs, whatever.
Devin Handler, VP US or VP Brand Marketing. At NAF Middle Eastern Grill. This has been awesome to have you. We like one question on the way out here.
Yeah.
Let me see. We got our magic hat of questions. What meal have you eaten the most of in your life?
Another contentious question.
Any meal.
Well, to be honest, it's probably pizza.
Okay. We're back to Domino's?
Nope.
Okay.
But a specific type of pizza. I'm born and raised in St. Louis, Missouri.
Whoop.
St. Louis has a St. Louis style pizza.
Okay.
It is pizza aficionados in the world would tell you that it's not pizza at all.
Oh, it what would they call it?
It's pizza.
Okay.
But let me describe it. It is a yeastless, thin crust, cracker crust, with a sweet marinara.
Okay.
And a cheese blend of mozzarella, Swiss, and provolone, called Provel.
Okay.
And so it is a sweet sauce with a milky, smoky cheese on a cracker thin crust cut into squares.
It's a square cut pizza. Now you're talking. Okay.
So this sounds awesome. It's more like pizza nachos than it is pizza. But I worked at a place called Emo's Pizza. It's a huge chain in the Midwest.
We're going to start charging these folks.
And I'll tell you what, I worked there for 8 years, you know, and they make everything in-house. And my wife actually managed the one in college when we went to college. I was a delivery driver.
Oh, so you loitered.
So I've not only worked at for the Emo organization itself, but I've worked for franchisees in other parts of the world. It's where I got my first taste of franchising, frankly, and understood, you know, what it means to be an independent business owner and how to protect the investment of a franchisee. But beyond that, I also learned what it takes to make a business work. And that pizza holds a special place in my heart. And I've probably eaten that an Emo's Pizza at least 1,000 times.
Okay. Okay. And again, where's Emo's?
Mainly St. Louis, Missouri.
St. Louis.
Mainly Missouri.
Mainly Missouri. Okay. Wow. Emo's Pizza, the Lake House.
The square and beyond compare.
Yeah. Square beyond compare. Is that theirs or did you just take it?
That's the Emo's. We've been saying it for years. They finally used it. Right.
Beautiful, beautiful. Well, shout out Square Pizza, Emo's, and Devin. Thank you again so much for coming on and joining us today at Locally Perfected. And we'll talk to you next time. Thanks.
Awesome. Again. It's been super fun.